The following program features the opinions of the host. Listeners are encouraged to seek their own understanding.
When most of us think of angels, we picture these figures of light, wearing white with enormous wings on their back. Most people believe that they have a personal guardian angel. We also assume that angels come in a couple of varieties. Archangels, your standard angel, and perhaps those fat little babies with wings. When an angel falls, it becomes a demon, right? But are any of these assumptions biblical? What the Bible says about these supernatural helpers might surprise you. Welcome to the Ghost in You podcast, a podcast about the weird, the wonderful, and the terrifying in the Bible. I'm Diane Student, your guide and host on this strange journey through the Bible. Episode 6, Angels. Angels show up in many different religions, from Judaism to Islam to Zoroastrianism to Theosophy to Paganism to Baha'i faith to Sikhism and, obviously, Christianity. Most are depicted as benevolent spirit helpers, wearing long flowing robes with large wings on their backs. The Hebrew and Greek terms for angels are male, and in the Bible, whenever an angel appeared to someone, it was always as the male gender. But angels in their spirit form are considered to be genderless. Some of the first depictions of angels were in Assyria before 1000 BC, and these were statues featuring winged bulls or lions with the head of a human that they called Lamassu. Ancient Greece had multiple depictions in statues and paintings of Eros and Nike, who were both human-looking with wings. The Catacomb of Priscilla featured wall paintings of biblical scenes, and one of these has Gabriel telling Mary that she will give birth to Jesus. Interestingly, Gabriel has no wings in that scene. Wings would not appear in art on angels until the 4th century AD, and this would be a piece of Byzantine art that would appear on the prince's sarcophagus, which was a marble coffin found near Turkey. Roman Catholic iconography featured many depictions of angels, and angels have appeared in our modern artwork as well. Matthew chapter 28, verse 3 describes an angel as being like lightning and his clothing white as snow. Psalms chapter 103, verse 20, describes angels with, "Bless the Lord, O you his angels, you mighty ones who do his word, obeying the voice of his word." So we know from this that angels are mighty, and their job is to obey the voice of his word. Some members of the angelic host are for communication, some are mediators, and others are guardians. And very few classes of angels seem to have wings. How many angels are there? Jude 14 reads, "It was also about these that Enoch, the seventh from Adam, prophesied, saying, 'Behold, the Lord comes with 10,000s of his holy ones.'" Revelation chapter 5, verses 11 and 12 read, "When I looked and heard the voice of many angels, numbering thousands upon thousands and 10,000 times 10,000. This has also been translated as numbering myriads of myriads and thousands of thousands. The first group of angels are traditionally thought to be the first hierarchy. Angels of presence is what they are referred to as. The first of these are the seraphim. The seraphim worship God around his throne and are agents of purification. The word seraphim only appears in the book of Isaiah. The Hebrew word seraph means to burn. Isaiah describes the seraphim in a vision he sees of God in Isaiah chapter 6, verses 1 to 2. "In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him stood the seraphim. Each had 6 wings. With 2 he covered his face, and with 2 he covered his feet, and with 2 he flew." And while Revelation doesn't use the term seraphim, it does mention these 6-winged angels in chapter 4, verse 8. "Each of the 4 living creatures had 6 wings, and was covered with eyes all around. even under its wings. Day and night, they never stop saying, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty, who was and is to come." So the seraphim clearly are a special class of angel near the throne of God, positioned above the throne. The next group in this hierarchy are the cherubim. Cherubim are a special class of angels, and we know this because they come into very close contact to the throne of Yahweh. This was also represented on the Ark of the Covenant. Exodus chapter 25, verses 17 to 22 describes the Ark. "And you shall make an atoning cover of pure gold, 2.5 cubits long and 1.5 cubits wide. You shall make 2 cherubim of gold. Make them of hammered work at the 2 ends of the atoning cover. Make 1 cherub at one end and 1 cherub at the other end. You shall make the cherubim of 1 piece with the atoning cover as its 2 ends. And the cherubim shall have their wings spread upward, covering the atoning cover with their wings and facing one another. The faces of the cherubim are to be turned toward the atoning cover. Then you shall put the atoning cover on top of the ark. And in the ark you shall put the testimony which I will give to you. There I will meet with you, and from above the atoning cover, from between the 2 cherubim, which are upon the ark of the testimony, I will speak to you about every commandment that I will give you for the sons of Israel." The ark was where God physically came to meet with Moses, and I think it was meant to be a representation of the throne in heaven. Clearly, the cherubim were important enough for God to require them to be added to the ark. And just like the seraphim, these are some very bizarre-looking angels. Ezekiel tells us about 4 of them in Ezekiel chapter 1, verses 4 to 28. "As I looked, behold, a stormy wind came out of the north, and a great cloud with brightness around it, and fire flashing forth continually, and in the midst of the fire, as it were gleaming metal. And from the midst of it came the likeness of 4 living creatures, and this was their appearance. They had a human likeness, but each had 4 faces, and each of them had 4 wings. Their legs were straight, and the soles of their feet were like the sole of a calf's foot, and they sparkled like burnished bronze. Under their wings, on their 4 sides, they had human hands. And the 4 had their faces and their wings thus. Their wings touched one another. Each one of them went straight forward without turning as they went. As for the likeness of their faces, each had a human face. The 4 had the face of a lion on the right side, the 4 had the face of an ox on the left side, and the 4 had the face of an eagle. Such were their faces. And their wings were spread out above. Each creature had 2 wings, each of which touched the wing of another, while 2 covered their bodies. And each went straight forward. Wherever the spirit would go, they went, without turning as they went. As for the likeness of the living creatures, their appearance was like burning coals of fire, like the appearance of torches moving to and fro among the living creatures. And the fire was bright, and out of the fire went forth lightning. And the living creatures darted to and fro, like the appearance of a flash of lightning." I'll be reading verses 15 to 21 a little later. I'll begin here again with verse 22. "Over the heads of the living creatures there was the likeness of an expanse, shining like awe-inspiring crystal, spread out above their heads. And under the expanse their wings were stretched out straight, one toward another. And each creature had 2 wings covering its body. And when they went, I heard the sound of their wings like the sound of many waters, like the sound of the Almighty, a sound of tumult, like the sound of an army. When they stood still, they let down their wings. And there came a voice from above the expanse over their heads. When they stood still, they let down their wings. And above the expanse over their heads, there was the likeness of a throne, in appearance like sapphire. And seated above the likeness of a throne was a likeness with a human appearance. And upward from what had the appearance of his waist, I saw as it were gleaming metal, like the appearance of fire enclosed all around. And downward from what had the appearance of his waist, I saw it were the appearance of fire, and there was brightness around him, like the appearance of the bow that is in the cloud on the day of rain. So was the appearance of the brightness all around." Revelation tells us that the cherubim also fall down and worship Jesus. They reveal the holiness of God and direct the worship and adoration of God. And when the time of the 4 horsemen of the apocalypse comes, the cherubim will be the ones directing what they do. One of the living creatures also unleashes the last 7 plagues of God's wrath. The final group of angels in this hierarchy are the Ophanim, or thrones. These are really interesting angels. Ophan in Hebrew means wheels, like the wheels on a cart. These Ophanim are living wheels. They are wheels on the throne of God. This is why they are called thrones. Ezekiel chapter 1, verses 15 to 21 speaks of these wheels. "Now as I looked at the living creatures, I saw a wheel on the earth beside the living creatures, one for each of the 4 of them. As for the appearance of the wheels and their construction, their appearance was like the gleaming of beryl, and the four had the same likeness, their appearance and construction being, as it were, a wheel within a wheel. When they went in any of their four directions without turning as they went, and their rims were tall and awesome, and the rims of all four were full of eyes all around. And when the living creatures went, the wheels went beside them. And when the living creatures rose from the earth, the wheels rose. Wherever the spirit wanted to go, they went, and the wheels rose along with them. For the spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. When those went, these went. And when those stood, these stood. And when those rose from the earth, the wheels rose along with them. For the spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. The Ophanim are connected to the cherubim for sure. There's more on this in Ezekiel chapter 10, verses 9 to 13. And I looked, and behold, there were four wheels beside the cherubim, one beside each cherub, and the appearance of the wheels was like sparkling beryl. And as for their appearance, the four had the same likeness, as if a wheel were within a wheel. When they went in any of their four directions without turning as they went. But in whatever direction the front wheel faced, the others followed without turning as they went. And their whole body, their rims and their spokes, their wings and the wheels were full of eyes all around, the wheels that the four of them had. As for the wheels, they were called in my hearing the whirling wheels. And here again we have these creatures covered with eyes. So all of these first tier hierarchy angels seem to be covered with eyes. Very peculiar. Colossians chapter 1 verse 16 speaks of thrones. For by him all things were created, in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones, or dominions, or rulers, or authorities, all things were created through him and for him. This next group are considered the second hierarchy, angels of government. And the first one of these was just mentioned here in Colossians, and those are the dominions. These are also known as lordships, and they are higher in the angel hierarchy, regulating the duties of lower class angels. They don't interact with humans unless it is to carry out God's judgments. The angels that came to Lot in Genesis 19 to warn him to leave Sodom and Gomorrah before they were destroyed were thought to be dominions. Tradition has them in charge of the stars and planets as well. Then we have the virtues. These angels are said to be full of divine strength and perform miracles, and they help people with burdens. And it's one class of angel that I could find no verses for in the Bible. So this seems to be a part of religious tradition rather than maybe something that is covered fully in the Bible. Next, we have the principalities. These are the princes, and they rule over nations. Daniel has an angel that comes to visit him, and this angel tells him that he was delayed in chapter 10 because the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days, but Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me. For I was left there with the kings of Persia, and came to make you understand what is to happen to your people in the latter days. For the vision is for days yet to come. Later in this chapter, this angel mentions the prince of Greece. So there you're seeing how there's these different princes ruling over the nations, and these are angels. I believe I've read that there are 70 of them. The third hierarchy are the archangels and then your standard angels. The term archangel is only used twice in the Bible. The first is in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 16. For the Lord himself will descend from heaven with a cry of command, with the voice of an archangel, and with the sound of the trumpet of God, and the dead in Christ will rise first. Since it's describing Jesus having the voice of an archangel, I'm assuming it is very loud and booming. Jude 1, verse 9 reads, but when the archangel Michael, contending with the devil, was disputing about the body of Moses, he did not presume to pronounce a blasphemous judgment, but said, the Lord rebuke you. So here is where we get definitive proof that Michael is one of our archangels. But those are the only two times that archangel is used in the Bible, and yet it's a very common term that most Christians know and most non-Christians know. If we look at the extra-biblical source of 1 Enoch, in chapter 20, it tells us about the seven spirits before the throne of God. And these are the names of the holy angels who watch. Uriel, one of the holy angels, who is over the world and over Tartarus. Raphael, one of the holy angels who's over the spirits of men. Raguel, one of the holy angels who takes vengeance on the world of the luminaries. Michael, one of the holy angels, to wit, he that is set over the best part of mankind and over chaos. Seraquiel, one of the holy angels who set over the spirits, who sin in the spirit. Gabriel, one of the holy angels who's over paradise, and the serpents, and the cherubim. Remiel, one of the holy angels whom God set over those who rise. Only Michael and Gabriel are mentioned by name in the traditional Bible. All of those names end with El, and that means God or deity. You might recall that Elohim is the Hebrew word for God. This is the plural form of El, which was the name of the Canaanite supreme god. Elohim being plural reflects the triune aspect of Yahweh. Eastern Orthodox religions believe that there are thousands of archangels, so no one knows for sure how many there really are. Then there are other classes of angels that I don't really know where they fall, but they seem to be separate. We have the Watchers, which I mentioned in the Nephilim episode. I'm not sure where Watchers fall in the hierarchy. These are called the Holy Ones, and there are Good Watchers and Fallen Watchers. Their name seems to indicate that they are witnesses, and they are guarding. As mentioned in the Nephilim episode, the Watchers were the ones who came down on Mount Hermon and chose human women to impregnate. There were 200 of them, so we know there have to be hundreds of them. And clearly, the Fallen Watchers not only disobeyed God, but they turned on their purpose of protecting humans, because I think we all know that when the passages say that they took wives for themselves, taking is rape. The term Watcher only appears in the book of Daniel in the official Bible. King Nebuchadnezzar has a dream, and he tells Daniel in chapter 4, verse 13, "I saw in the visions of my head as I lay in bed, and behold, a watcher, a holy one, came down from heaven." And verse 17, "The sentence is by the decree of the watchers, the decision by the word of the holy ones, to the end that the living may know that the Most High rules the kingdom of men and gives it to whom he will and sets over it the lowliest of men." The watchers appear heavily in the book of Enoch and the book of Jubilees, which are considered extra-biblical texts. The first section of 1 Enoch runs from chapters 1 to chapter 36 and is literally called the Book of Watchers. There will eventually be an episode on the Watchers, so I'll get into more details then. Next, we have the angel with the key to the bottomless pit. This is a nameless angel who clearly has a special job, and he must be very powerful. This is found in Revelation chapter 20, verses 1 to 3. "Then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, holding in his hand the key to the bottomless pit and a great chain. And he seized the dragon, that ancient serpent, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years, and threw him into the pit, and shut it and sealed it over him, so that he might not deceive the nations any longer, until the 1,000 years were ended. After that, he must be released for a little while." While this verse gives no name, looking back on Revelation chapter 9, verse 11, we read, "They have as king over them the angel of the bottomless pit. His name in Hebrew is Abaddon, and in Greek he is called Apollyon." I don't believe that Abaddon and this angel with the key to the bottomless pit are the same angels. They're obviously both connected to it, and it would almost seem that they are the same, because I would figure if Abaddon is over the bottomless pit, he would have a key to it. But most biblical scholars see Abaddon as a fallen angel. And I agree with that, because clearly I don't think he would be in heaven right now and then is going to come down with a key to this bottomless pit. He's already there. Then we have the angel of the Lord. The angel of the Lord is mentioned 3 times in the Bible, and each time he's described with a sword drawn in his hand. This is a separate entity from all the other angels. Numbers chapter 22, verses 22 to 31 reads, "But God's anger was kindled because he went, and the angel of the Lord took his stand in the way as his adversary. Now he was riding on the donkey, and his 2 servants were with him. And the donkey saw the angel of the Lord standing in the road with a drawn sword in his hand. The donkey turned aside out of the road and went into the field. And Balaam struck the donkey to turn her into the road. Then the angel of the Lord stood in a narrow path between the vineyards with a wall on either side. And when the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she pushed against the wall and pressed Balaam's foot against the wall. So he struck her again. Then the angel of the Lord went ahead and stood in a narrow place where there was no way to turn either to the right or to the left. When the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she lay down under Balaam. And Balaam's anger was kindled, and he struck the donkey with his staff. Then the Lord opened the mouth of the donkey, and she said to Balaam, 'What have I done to you that you've struck me 3 times? And Balaam said to the donkey, 'Because you've made a fool of me. I wish I had a sword in my hand, for then I would kill you.' And the donkey said to Balaam, 'Am I not your donkey on which you've ridden all your life long to this day? Is it my habit to treat you this way?' And he said, 'No, Then the Lord opened the eyes of Balaam, and he saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way, with his drawn sword in his hand, and he bowed down and fell on his face. Now, I just want to address this passage for a minute because there's a lot of stuff going on here. Obviously, we have a donkey that is speaking out loud. It's probably one of the craziest, weirdest passages in the Bible. So it fits in with this podcast perfectly because we all know donkeys can't talk. So here we have God letting this donkey talk to Balaam. And what's really funny about this is that I think most people look at a donkey and think, oh, they're not very smart. But he's clearly smarter than Balaam. He's like, dude, I've never done anything to you before. There's got to be an issue that I'm now disobeying you. And he's really lucky that this donkey didn't just stomp him to death. The other thing that's really cool here is I'm really into ghosts. And I'm one of those people who believes that animals are able to see in a different dimension than we do. I believe they're very sensitive to spirits and can sometimes see them. So I find it very interesting here that Balaam can't see the angel of the Lord, but the donkey does. And I don't know that that's necessarily just because God said, well, I'm going to let the donkey see the angel. Maybe it's because donkeys can see angels. But also clearly, we have this angel here that is called the angel of the Lord. It's not just some standard angel. This is one that has some kind of important job and has always got a sword whenever he shows up. 1 Chronicles chapter 21, verse 16 says, and David lifted his eyes and saw the angel of the Lord standing between earth and heaven, and in his hand a drawn sword stretched out over Jerusalem. Then David and the elders, clothed in sackcloth, fell upon their faces. So here we have David having the exact same reaction that Balaam did, falling down on his face. So this angel of the Lord is so powerful and probably terrifying that it causes these men to fall down on their face. And how big must the angel of the Lord be that he is standing between earth and heaven and his sword stretches out over Jerusalem? And the third place where he is seen is in Joshua chapter 5, verses 13 to 15. This reveals who this entity holding the sword is. When Joshua was by Jericho, he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, a man was standing before him with his drawn sword in his hand. And Joshua went to him and said to him, are you for us or for our adversaries? And he said, no, but I am the commander of the army of the Lord. Now I have come. And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and worshipped and said to him, what does my Lord say to his servant? And the commander of the Lord's army said to Joshua, take off your sandals from your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy. And Joshua did so. Another man who was commanded to take off his sandals was Moses at the burning bush. God was the fire in the burning bush. Holy ground is where God is, and one should take off their sandals. So Joshua was in the presence of God in the second person of the Trinity, more than likely Jesus. So it almost seems that before Jesus was incarnated, he showed up in the Old Testament as the angel of the Lord with a sword. And then finally, we have many angels who seem to rank much like privates in the military, or without rank. These without rank are the servants and protectors of us. The ones we may see or come into contact with. We have a lot of angel encounter stories out there. I thought I'd share a couple with you. This was written on liveabout.com by Stephen Wagner. Jackie B. believes that her guardian angel came to her aid on two occasions to help her avoid serious injury. According to her testimony, she actually physically felt and heard this protective force. Both encounters happened when she was a child of kindergarten age. The first experience took place at a popular sledding hill, where Jackie was enjoying the day with her family. The young girl decided to try sledding down the steepest part of the hill. She closed her eyes and started down. I apparently hit someone going down and I was spinning out of control. I was heading for the metal guardrail. I didn't know what to do, says Jackie. I suddenly felt something push my chest down. I came within less than a half inch of the rail but didn't hit it. I could have lost my nose. Jackie's second experience occurred during her birthday celebration at school. She had run across the playground to place her crown on a bench. While running back to her friends, three boys tripped her. The playground was filled with metal objects and wood chips. Jackie went flying and something hit her just below the eye. But I felt something pull me back when I fell, Jackie says. The teacher said that they saw me sort of fly forward, then fly back at the same time. As they hurried me to the nurse's office, I heard an unfamiliar voice keep telling me, "Don't worry, I'm here. God doesn't want anything to happen to his baby." Someone with the username D. Baylor Baby entered the hospital in 1994 with acute pain from a fibroid tumor the size of a grapefruit in her uterus. The surgery was successful, but more complicated than expected, and her troubles weren't over. She recalls that she was in horrible pain. She had an allergic reaction to the morphine she was given, and the doctors tried to counteract it with other medications. This made a bad experience even worse. She just had a major surgery, and now she was dealing with the pain of an acute drug reaction. After receiving more pain medication, she was able to sleep for a few hours. "I awoke in the middle of the night. According to the wall clock, it was 2:45. I heard someone speaking and realized someone was at my bedside. It was a young woman with short brown hair and wearing a white hospital staff uniform. She was sitting and reading aloud from the Bible. I said to her, 'Am I all right? Why are you here with me?' The woman visiting her stopped reading but did not look up. She simply said, 'I was sent here to make sure you'd be all right. You're going to be fine. Now you should get some rest and go back to sleep.' She began to read again and I drifted off back to sleep. The next morning, she explained the experience to her doctor, who checked and said that no staff had visited her overnight. She asked all of the nurses, and no one knew of this visitor. To this day, she says, 'I believe that I was visited by my guardian angel that night. She was sent to comfort me and assure me that I would be okay.' Coincidentally, the time on the clock that night, 2:45 a.m., is the exact time recorded on my birth certificate when I was born." The interesting thing here is we have a female angel being described. "I'm one who believes that angels can appear of either gender when they're here on Earth. I know the Bible never mentions any female angels, but I believe they're a definite possibility. As for us each having our own guardian angel, I think it's a nice thought, but I don't believe that we do. But I believe when we need angels, they are dispatched to us. And I actually have my own story of what I believe was an angel encounter. I was very excited. I had bought my first brand new car. It wasn't used at all. It was a Kia Sophia. You probably haven't even heard of them. Kia had just come into business, and the Sophia was one of its first models. I think they were testing it out because they weren't very good cars, and Kia wasn't a very good car maker at that time. And then I was using it for delivering pizzas, so I ran the transmission really hard. I hit 50,000 miles, and it decided it was done. And it did this on a very busy street in downtown Denver. For anybody who lives in Denver, it was on Spear Boulevard. There were three lanes of traffic, and thankfully I was in the far right lane, but I was going to be blocking a lot of traffic. And I knew I needed to get my car moved, but the transmission had gone out, which means the car is not going anywhere unless I'm pushing it. I step out of the car, and I have the car door open, and I'm reaching in so that I can use the steering wheel to turn the car. Thankfully, I was at the very front of the lane, and I was going to go down this other road that was a major road. And there was a building there that I was going to park the car behind and then call for a tow truck. I'm psyching myself up. Thankfully, I was kind of facing downhill, but I knew the minute I got around that corner, I was going to have to use every ounce of strength I had to try to push that car and steer it at the same time and not get hit. I start to push the car and all of a sudden it starts moving real easily. And I was like, wow. And for some reason, I looked over my shoulder and there was this guy at the back of my car pushing it. And I was like, wow, I don't know where he came from, but cool, this is great. So both of us are pushing it and I'm able to steer it and we get it so that it's behind the building. And I jumped in my car quick as we were getting it to the back of the building because I needed to push on the brakes to stop it so it didn't hit the building. So I jump in my car, I put the brakes on, I throw the car into park, I get out of the car and the guy is nowhere to be seen. And it wasn't like there was anywhere for him to hide. It was a big parking lot, and I saw nobody walking over that way or this way. He was just gone. And it wasn't until later, after I called the tow truck and I called my boss and I got a ride to work, that I was sitting around thinking about it, and I thought, you know, that guy, he just came out of nowhere. I didn't see anybody walking down the street before I lost my transmission. And then I certainly didn't see him after I put the car in park. And it was a very quick thing. So there was no way that he could have disappeared that quickly. So I don't know for sure, but I like to think that I had an angel stop to give me some help when I needed it. And we can't talk about angels without, of course, talking about the fallen angels. I imagine that they come from every class of angel. Lucifer, or Satan as we mostly call him, was a high-ranking angel who has access to the throne room of God. And we know this because in the book of Job in the Bible, he comes and goes from that throne room all the time. He will eventually have his own episode, as will the fallen angels. I don't believe that Satan was the most powerful fallen angel. Was he an archangel? I know some people claim that to be the case, but his name doesn't end with EL, and all those other ones did. So I think he wasn't an archangel. I believe there were several high-ranking angels that fell, and that these fallen ones conduct themselves in much the same way as honor among thieves, always jockeying for power. We focus greatly on Satan, and perhaps that is because he seems to have risen to the top over time. For much of my life, I just believed there were angels with a few special archangels, and then the fallen angels, which were actually demons. As you know from earlier episodes, my thoughts on demons have changed. I clearly don't think that they're fallen angels anymore. I understand angels in a different way now, too. How about you? What says the ghost in you? I want to thank you guys for tuning in to this episode. If you want to contact me, you can do that at theghostinyoupod@gmail.com. And follow me at The Ghost in You Pod on Instagram. And you can subscribe to us on YouTube or BitChute under The Ghost in You Pod. May God bless you and keep you. The Ghost in You Podcast is researched, written, edited, and produced by me, Diane Student. Our theme music is by Muse Music with Groove Studios. All of the music is by artists from filmmusic.io.